Mr. Young, could you please return to your seat?
Paging Mr. Young.
Paging Mr. Johnston to his seat.
Paging Mr. Young.
Mr. Young, could you please take your seat?
Oh. All right, so thank you for coming back for the second half of our meeting. And there was a request for a 30-minute presentation by the various stakeholders and partners in this particular project. And there was a sequence suggested, but I will. Okay. Clerk of the board, seating, please. Thank you. See, it's my turn now. Just kidding. You know, you're welcome to move around the order of which you will speak. You know, it's your presentation, and also you submit it in a timely fashion. A PowerPoint presentation, which I appreciate. So please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Wolf, board members. My name is Robert Johnson. I am the Deputy General Manager of the Monterey County Water Resources Agency. I've been asked to kind of introduce the presentation and the team here. I'm going to let them roll through this because they've worked on this really hard. And really what I'd like to say is I really thank or want to thank the agency and the partners, really want to thank the regional board and the regional board staff for the work they've been doing. As Mr. Hammer mentioned, you know, we've been on the phone the last couple days a lot to try to figure out the best way that this CERT can work. And we think we're close on a lot of issues. And or items, really. And I just want to let you know that we're here for to answer questions and comments. So with that.
Hello, I'm Abby Taylor Silva, and I'm the Vice President of the Grower Shipper Association of Central California. Thank you for having us here today to speak about your proposed certification of the 2016 through 2025 Salinas River Stream Maintenance Program for Monterey County. Today, I am joined by Shauna Juarez, and Shauna is the Associate Water Resources Engineer of the Monterey County Water Resources Agency. Today, we also have Abby Hart, who is the Salinas Agricultural Director for the Nature Conservancy, and Paul Robbins, Executive Director of the Monterey County Resource Conservation District, and we'll be speaking jointly, although we'll be switching seats a bit. So in 2015, we came together, the four organizations you see before, and formed an MOU to formalize a relationship that we'd built in the development of a demonstration project or a pilot program on just over 11 miles of the Salinas River in Tular and Gonzales. The Nature Conservancy comes to us with technical input and assistance related to biology, hydrology, and design, and really brought the idea of secondary channels, a core element of this program, to the partnership, as well as funding and resource sharing that was essential to bringing the demonstration project to fruition. The Grower Shipper Association, my organization, has worked with partners such as the Salinas River Channel Coalition and the Monterey County Farm Bureau to engage operators and landowners, working out funding mechanisms for RMU operations, and keeping the agricultural community informed of our progress, challenges, and opportunities. It's important to note that without the leadership of a small group of owners and operators in the Tular and Gonzales area, as well as partners you see here today, such as Donna Myers and Darlene Din, the demonstration project would never have come to fruition. And that's really been so essential to helping landowners and operators throughout the river understand and support this program. The Resource Conservation District of Monterey County brought important biological monitoring and reporting to the partnership, as well as experience from their Arundo-Donax and Tamarisk mitigation program, which began in 2011. And the Water Resources Agency of Monterey County provided important leadership. They led the permitting, coordination, and oversight of the project as a whole. And as the permit applicant, they spent day-to-day operations before, during, and after the work being done. So together we worked to achieve stakeholder support with various objectives on this multi-benefit approach and were bolstered in our efforts upon receipt of a Coastal Conservancy grant in 2015. So as you see here, this is a bit of the history of this project. And in 1997 through 2008, management for flood risk reduction occurred in response to the 1995 flood. And the Salinas River Channel Coalition was formed to bring together the landowners and operators just after that flood. The Monterey County Water Resources Agency administered the program by holding the 401 and 404 permits, and the landowners obtained their own 1600 permits and performed maintenance activities. In 2008, the permitting agency's findings of potential impacts to threatened species and the river system halted the SMP, and the current permit at that time expired. From 2008 to 2013, stakeholders were at odds over management approaches, and the landowners and operators on the river, which is privately owned, worked to try to find a solution, but to no avail. In 2014, after learning of this new project idea, which is the basis of what we're talking to you about today, from the Nature Conservancy, much work was done to build trust and cooperation between the Nature Conservancy, the Water Resources Agency, RCD, and the operators and landowners, and that demonstration project was implemented in Chular and Gonzales. The Nature Conservancy began having conversations with landowners in 2013 together with these organizations. And Assemblymember Alejo and Congressman Farr then held a meeting in March of 2014 with numerous permitting agencies and these same partners in the governor's office, which really set in motion the process for approval of a 401, 404, and 1600 permit. And that work did begin in October of 2014. In order to get there, we started back at the drawing board, and we built relationships and developed the science. And from there, we spent a considerable amount of time understanding the interests, needs, and wants of our partners to jointly design a new approach that would provide multiple benefits. I think that this experience has been a wonderful illustration of cultures coming together and trying to learn from one another, and then taking that to build a project. And I'll just give you a short story of my culture that I come from, and how I think they had so much appreciation for what this project meant to the conservation community. And that story is that when we began the pilot project, there was one company in the valley who really brought their team together, their people together, and really championed this. And I got a call one day, it was on my message box, from one of these growers, and they were saying, hey, I'm out here, and the secondary channel looks great, and all this Arundo's gone, and it's amazing. And in the middle of the call, they started screaming, oh my gosh, a raptor just came down and picked up a lizard, oh my gosh! And they were so excited. And really, isn't that what we were hoping to do? That raptor would have never seen that lizard the day before, right? And isn't that what we're hoping to achieve, this multi-benefit approach that's good for the ag community, but is also good for the community as a whole? And so I leave that with you, and I now pass it over to Shauna.
Hi, Shauna Juarez. And so through this process, what we did is we first developed goals and objectives. So I know that was brought up previously. So this program does have set goals, and they're listed here, and they are multi-objective goals, multi-benefit goals. So we're looking at flood protection, but we're also looking at having a feasible project that you can actually implement and that it's reasonable to go through the process. We also want an adaptable and sustainable program because we're looking at many different issues within the watershed, and we want to be able to change with the changing system. We also incorporated resource protection and mitigation measures. That was an important goal for the project, and reducing flood frequency extent for the agricultural community, as it is a prime community for, you know, the country, the nation. So these goals and objectives were blended into the approach. So how are we going to meet those goals on a, you know, day to day? So what really happened is a lot of site visits and meetings with various stakeholders so that we could really get that bigger picture and to see the river and to understand what people's concerns are. The river is very diverse from north to south, and so there's different issues as you go up and down the river. So outreach was a big part of it. And establishing a process so that we could make sure we have the right people at the table to make the decisions to work with design. That was turned into a technical and design committee that had a lot of different people at the table bringing in their knowledge and expertise to come to a consensus. We also thought engaging permitting agencies, resource agencies early in the process and keeping them you know, involved throughout the process was critical. It clearly worked here where we didn't have a lot of surprises. We had a couple surprises, which we'll talk about later, but meeting with everyone, knowing what different agencies' concerns were and having airing those out in the same room so that we could make sure not to have conflicts between different permits or different approaches was really critical. And everyone was really willing. The resource agencies were really willing to do that, which was nice. We also wanted to avoid most critical habitat and enhance riparian areas. So Abby will go over how that was done.
Good afternoon, Chair and Board members. I'm Abby Hart from the Nature Conservancy, and I'll be telling you a little bit more about the science-based approach, and hopefully we'll have also the opportunity to address some of the questions that came up before lunch. Starting off, it's important to note that the Salinas River is an altered river system. We're dealing with a river that is whose flows are mediated by the reservoirs, dams, and levees that are put in place there, as well as a larger project going on called the Salinas Valley Water Project. And particularly when considering the requirement for a long-term management strategy, I urge you to think about these other things going on in the watershed and of the many stakeholders beyond those present here today and a part of this partnership that should reasonably be providing input into such a strategy, and think that perhaps this sort of project is better embedded into that than the other way around. So our particular approach on the science side was to use a two-dimensional hydraulic model that John Rohrbaugh showed you a few images from, and I'll be showing you a few more. And the primary purpose for that model was to diagnose the problem, so in a sense to step back from our assumptions and some of what had been done previously to assess what occurs in the river under different flow regimes and different flood situations, understand what benefits could occur to the whole system given a few different scenarios, and then to define the potential impacts that any of those management scenarios would have along the river. And so here are two images of this flood model, one of which you'll recall from Mr. Rohrbaugh's presentation. The first shows you an example of that flood extent from the 5 to 10 year, from a 5 to 10 year flood event. And as he mentioned, the darker colors correspond to deeper waters. On the other side, what you'll see are some of the other parameters that we were looking at, like depth, not only depth, but velocity and duration of flooding. So for example, in the image on your right, the darker red corresponds to a longer duration of floodwaters. And that's something that we found to be very important to landowners as well. So not only considering how far the flooding occurred, but how long their land would stay wet and how quickly that water was moving across their banks, levees, and fields. And as he also mentioned, the design was I think it's important to mention the role of the technical and design committees in this. This design wasn't something that the Nature Conservancy or any of the stakeholders cooked up independently, but something that we came up through these technical and design committee processes. And to address one of Mayor Delgado's concerns about potentially applying pressure onto the banks, when we designed these secondary channels and then ran them subsequently through the model, we looked precisely at those impacts, whether that water would be shunted toward a bank or a levee and the type of impact. And then, in fact, the landowners were there in that room to have that discussion amongst themselves as well, to recognize that if one landowner was recommending a secondary channel in one place, the potential impact it could have on his or her neighbors. And so the way that these channels look in the river is just as Mr. Rohrbaugh mentioned. They tend to be cutting off meanders, providing the water with a faster route, occurring in naturally low-lying areas with this sparse or early successional vegetation or a rundo, or perhaps they are taking it takes the path of a former alignment of the river. And here gives you another example just in a conceptual drawing form where it's at a higher plateau than the Thalweger low flow channel where the water tends to be most of the year. And it just involves removing that vegetation and then smoothing the surface of the land where that vegetation was in place. And here we can visualize the benefits. So this is an image that I think will help you understand some of the things that you were asking about earlier. The questions that came up. On the left, you'll see the baseline scenario. So the current conditions in the river would provide a velocity graph like you're seeing on the left. So reds and yellows are your higher velocity waters and blues are your lower velocity waters. And in that current, under those current conditions, there's no secondary channel. And then in the image on the right, you'll see that we've modeled where the position of the secondary channel is. And in fact, you can see the velocity picking up in that secondary channel, but the velocity against that bank on the right, and then part of this additional section of that primary channel, the velocity has been reduced. So we're addressing a major concern of landowners there in terms of the velocity against their banks and pulling that velocity further toward the center of the main channel. While designing these secondary channels, we were taking into consideration the vegetation communities that are in place. We focused primarily on these arundo-dominated locations where it's sparse or early successional vegetation. So this could be, as Mr. Rohrbaum mentioned, between 25 to 75% bare ground, and any amount of arundo could be in there as well. There are very few seasonal wetlands in the river, but those we were able to avoid. And stands of more mature trees, as he mentioned, were avoided. And I'll be able to show you some images in a moment that show you just the type of measures landowners were taking to avoid those mature stands of trees. And the arundo itself tends to be concentrated further up in the watershed, which corresponds with south, so in the upper middle sections of the river, Greenfield and beyond. This gives you an idea of the type of vegetation mapping we did, which combined several different data sources, existing arundo maps, but also included many ground truthing trips done by our team of ecologists with the landowners along the river. The orange you see is arundo, and the shades of green and tan are more native vegetation types. And so here is an example. In the front of the image, you see this sparse early successional vegetation, just the type that could be in a secondary channel. And in the background, you see mature stands of cottonwood, which would be part of the avoided vegetation. This is baseline. Or is this post? This is a post from the demonstration. Okay. And the second image is also post, but closer to the time of mowing. And so you'll see that this particular landowner in the demonstration site has chosen to mow around all of the cottonwoods that were present. And if it's in the secondary channel, they could technically choose to take some of those smaller DBH trees out, but they saw that as a priority to avoid those. And the biological monitors went through and flagged those trees so that they would know and be able to make that choice. All right.
So this is an image to show you what an actual secondary channel looks like in the demonstration project after the work was completed. So what Mr. Rohrbaugh showed you was conceptual ideas of what they look in the permit application, which he's correct to say the locations have been designed and developed. We've looked at the impacts already. We gave all that information up front in the application. But when we actually go out in the field, there's biological monitors that the RCD is, you know, in charge of, and the landowners are working with them to make sure that the channels are in the best location in the field, and they're actually mapping them on the ground. So this is a result of that mapping, and it has that fine level of detail to show you trees that were, in this case, it was reported of trees removed. They also map trees that are saved. And so this just gives that perspective of kind of a narrow river channel in the Chular area, and you can still see the area of impact is that green area, and that the rest of the riparian vegetation is left untouched. So we received the draft water quality certification, and we did, you know, submit a letter kind of as a formality. I know this process is a little different, more unique than a typical process for a 401 certification, but we overall thought the certification was really well written, and staff was very responsive to the process that we undertook. So that included a demonstration project where we really learned what worked and what didn't work. And we also had a lessons learned meeting with different stakeholders to make sure we understood from different perspectives, you know, either resource agency or an operator, what worked for them and what didn't. And so we also had a permitting committee just for this larger project. So we had one-on-one meetings. Like I said, regional board staff was very attentive. They came up and they saw sites, and they were very interested in learning what we were proposing to do. So through that process, I think we came up with, you know, this draft certification is very close. The reason that we wrote a letter, again, it was somewhat of a formality because there was a public notice or public process, and also we didn't have a chance to see the draft certification previously. So some of the comments, most of the comments, are just small refinements. So it's when we actually, when it says something, it could be interpreted multiple ways. We wanted to be clear on what our intent was and what the regional board was after. So most of our comments are just small tweaks to make sure, you know, move a date here. This isn't going to be logical. And for me, I have a different lens because I'm in charge of actually implementing the 401 certification. So when I read the certification, I'm like, how am I going to accomplish that? So my comments are more based on that kind of information, knowing on the ground how I'm going to do something. But it does overall go over, you know, our activities, our approach, things we've discussed through the process, the reporting, and, you know, looking at effectiveness, I think, is really critical. So the section I that talks about the long-term effectiveness, we want to know just as much as you do if this project is worthwhile. Is it doing what we said it was going to do, what we think it's going to do? We want to see some water in the river. We want to know that. And we're just waiting through this drought to find out more answers. So we support that that condition is there. It makes a lot of sense. It also feeds into, you know, can there be more done in the river? Like Abby Hart said, this is a small piece of the river, and there is a longer, bigger perspective. And the Water Resources Agency acknowledges that and realizes, you know, we do need to look at this bigger picture. So we're on the same page in that regard. As far as conditioning our permit, our certification, for us directing us to look at that bigger picture with things outside of the scope of this project, we feel is not appropriate. So we want a commitment of stakeholders. We want, you know, this data and this information to feed into that process. The first long-term effectiveness plan is due in 5 years. That plan in 5 years is really going to give us the data and the information that we're all after to know how much benefit this project has. To do anything before that seems premature. So the timeline is a challenge for us. When we talk about doing something in 9 months from now, when our budget's already been approved, it is a challenge for us. We have the government bureaucracy we have to work with as well. And we want to make sure not to jump into something. We want to engage all the stakeholders, many more people than are here, many more people that are involved in this shorter-term stream maintenance program would need to be involved with this longer-term river management. So the connection of the impacts of this project, you know, that long-term effectiveness condition is really that place where it's saying, what are the impacts and benefits of this project? So we think that that's, you know, an adequate condition. And it's covering, you know, making sure beneficial uses are being preserved. And that data is being collected with this program, which will feed into the future. So as I said, collaboration is very necessary. And the regional board has been very involved with some of our other projects. And so we'd want to continue that and make sure that them, as long as other agencies, are committed to working towards this. That's a bit out of our control. So we can't, you know, do this project alone, and we also can't force other partners or agencies to meet these timelines that we're conditioned with. So again, it seems like out of scope for putting a condition like that on this project.
A quick question for you, clarification. Doesn't your ability to determine effectiveness depend on having adequate rainfall and flow in the river?
Some of it does, yes. I mean, recruitment of native vegetation to see how things grow back after a rundo are less, you know, impacted by flows in the river. They are, you know, resultant of rainfall. But you're right, this drought has made it where none of these channels in the demonstration project have been activated yet. So we still don't have those answers, which is why a five-year term, you know, having that first plan due after 5 years is appropriate, because we hopefully don't have a seven-year drought.
So, I mean, the 5 years is simply to give you adequate time to hopefully get maybe an above average rainfall and flood conditions.
You know, the secondary channels, some of them can activate as low as like a two-year event, 2 to 5 years. So we don't need much more above average, but we don't have those moisture conditions in the system, which is why even last year with a decent amount of rain, things were barely flowing in the northern reach.
Okay.
So at this point, I think, you know, we can answer more questions on this long-term Salinas River Management Strategy condition. We did write a letter to John Rohrbaugh, as stated, and I have copies of that letter if you're interested in receiving that. But I think, unless you object, we would move on with our presentation.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm Paul Robbins with the Resource Conservation District of Monterey County. And I mean, speaking of stakeholders with having an abiding interest in long-term management planning for all the resources in Monterey County, but we've been particularly interested in the Salinas River. You know, a key element of planning and our approach has been dealing with Arundo. And I think that we've been blessed with a confluence of timing and compatible needs in terms of the Arundo treatment and river management. And so I've been very fortunate to be sort of part of this, take it carried along with this process. Our approach for planning our Arundo work has been to map, you know, with the resources that are available using aerial photography to identify where the vegetation, where the Arundo is, similar to, and we use similar information resources as MCWRA. Based on that, we developed a plan and a permit and got the permits in place so that we could then appeal for the funding. During that process, MCWRA and other local partners were, you know, working on the EIR for this program, and we were able to inform each other as we went along so it would be maximized, it would maximize the compatibility. In fact, the opportunities to for mutual leverage. So our program, the Arundo Treatment Program, has a distinct flood prevention benefit. At the same time, landowners managing secondary channels and having mitigation be Arundo treatment helps to extend our program and extend the tax dollars that go into it through funding sources such as the Wildlife Conservation Board. So it's very valuable to have this sort of mutual back and forth. Our whole effort was initiated by the Agricultural Commissioner of Monterey County. They had an abiding interest to deal with this infestation, 1,400 or so acres of Arundo. And anyhow, it's been one of those sort of perfect storm things for me professionally and personally to be able to be a part of and to see something happening. And it is why the Wildlife Conservation Board is so fired up to support this work. They see this as an easy win for managing a weed in a single river system. Thank goodness Arundo does not propagate by seed. So you knock it out upstream, it's not going to come back up there unless somebody intentionally plants it. Of course, you do have to be eternally vigilant. This stuff is pernicious. That's why it was introduced to begin with. So there we have a significant public interest in managing this because of the wildlife impacts that it poses and the flooding issues that it poses. And we had a sort of an exigency with the change in management of the river in terms of it potentially being wetter more, that there would be an actual sort of increase in the population. So we needed to strike while the iron was hot. And the timing has worked out very well. And then the synergy is just that we have multiple parties that all want to see this stuff gone. So, you're there. Thank you. We're coordinated with the San Luis Obispo County folks. So that's Mark Ray, the Ag Commissioner down here. That's Camp Roberts that has the rivers going through it that do have some Arundo and tamarisk on them that they are on top of. So we have good communication there to minimize future reintroductions. I think you heard already that the area south of King City was already treated once thanks to weed management area funding in 2008. And we are now this year resurveying that area and we'll be retreating it as under our current Wildlife Conservation Board funds. As well as treating the lands to the north. Right now, just as far as greenfield, starting in September, we will start mowing from Greenfield to Soledad. We don't expect to get all the way to Soledad. It really depends on the concentrations of the Arundo patches, but we've got the landowner permissions, et cetera. And we designed our grant proposal to the Wildlife Conservation Board with the designs in mind that had already been created for the stream maintenance program. So we knew where the secondary channels were going to be. We knew where patches were that were the most likely for mitigation. So we knew that we could say, and it was very advantageous for a grant proposal, we're going to control 300 acres of Arundo with grant funds, and there will be another 50 acres in this same vicinity immediately close to it that will be funded privately. So there's, you know, match. And so far, the Wildlife Conservation Board has committed almost $5 million to this work. And they're asking me when we're going to put in our next proposal. So they're very eager. The Coastal Conservancy, they're kind of waiting for us to get a little closer to the coast. They're not quite sure where the Salinas River becomes a coastal stream in terms of this work, though they have been very supportive of the stream maintenance program in general and have been a critical partner. Anyhow, we have there's a huge momentum in place, and it's something that's very exciting for me to be a part of. I think you already know the story that is told here in terms of how Arundo management can be done in a manner that minimizes environmental impacts. You've seen the descriptions, likely in the context of the stream maintenance program's permit. We're using the same methods, with the exception that our Arundo program is only above ground treatment. Our intention with that approach was we didn't know how fast the stream maintenance program was going to be able to come through with their permits, and we wanted to get something on the ground faster with a lighter approach, with a sort of less onerous or less raising fewer concerns with the resource agencies. That said, this is one of the areas here that we treated just south of Greenfield. You see the river channel down the middle. That's the racetrack where everybody rides their dirt bikes. To the right, where it looks like a little bit of a lawn, that's where we mowed the Arundo. So you can see the tufts of willow and cottonwood and such, and coyote brush that we mowed around. And with these mowers, you can do remarkable work. Typically, you all know, we went in with this approach that you would or first treat with herbicide, assuming the plants were green, and then mow if these plants constricted the flows. But with the drought, we couldn't find any green Arundo that was late enough in the season, that was green late enough in the season that merited herbicide treatment. So we had to sort of shift gears and work, one, the most logical route. And so we went with mowing the Arundo. And what turns out to happen, and what we found in many places, is that actually stimulates a regrowth so that you actually get something green to spray. And so these grounds have been mowed and sprayed twice now, so three treatments in total. And that is basically the protocol that we're using with landowners, and then we have in our landowner cooperative agreement that they do follow-up work with our support, thanks to the Ag Commissioner's ongoing funding, for mapping and monitoring and assistance with spot treatment. So we're hoping we have a long-term program in that.
Has that reduced the footprint?
Yes.
For Arundo, or are you just maintaining its footprint?
No. Well, for example, we knocked it down about 90% to 95%. With the first herbicide treatment. So we mowed it, it all came back up like a beautiful little cornfield, nice even stand, great leaf coverage, so if you're applying herbicide, that's what you dream for. And we hit that, and the next year what came back this last winter was about 5% cover. And then we've treated that again. And it ranges, it depends on how robust it is. But the drought has been a big help in terms of knocking that back. But we expect that to be, you know, somewhere between 1% and 5%, if that. And that's where the landowner support comes in. And I think I'm gonna leave it at that. And thank you.
So just to wrap up, as far as the agency and the team's next step is, we really need each of these permits that are listed above on this slide. And we do have confidence that we can work with regional board staff to get that 401 cert to be something that's we're able to implement and it meets the objectives and goals of the regional board. So I think we're close. As far as the other agencies, we're working with them as well very diligently, and we're on track to get those permits. And we then would work, you know, we're working with the landowners to make sure they're trained properly and the operators so they understand the permit conditions. So we need those permits to train. So we're kind of waiting on that so they can enter into an agreement with us, get trained, and start those pre-maintenance surveys so we can begin work this fall. So we are here for questions, the whole team.
All right. And, you know, we can entertain questions at this time, and keep in mind that still have three other speaker cards, 3 minutes each. But while the presentation is fresh in everybody's mind, any question on my right?
I just have one question. You folks referenced, as did staff, applying lessons learned in the demonstration project, what worked and what didn't work, to the bigger project. What didn't work? What were the lessons from the demonstration project? Or because it kind of sounded, when we asked staff that question, like, well, this is really going to be the same as the demonstration project, except in the restricted reaches.
So we actually, after the first year, we did have a list of things that didn't quite work as expected. One of them is requiring someone to do Arundo treatment, but not having any Arundo nearby. That didn't work. So they needed to work with another landowner, either in their RMU or in the adjacent RMU, to find another area they could actually do Arundo treatment. So that was one of the things. And we actually got an amended 401 certification after the first year to account for some minor tweaks. Another thing was the rainfall requirements of the regional board and the rainfall requirements of U.S. Fish and Wildlife they were in conflict, and they were hard to follow based on how rural some of this area is. There's not good rain stations nearby. And so we made some minor edits like that. We also just procedurally had to make some changes, how we were collecting data, how we were scheduling landowners, things like that that aren't as much covered in the permits.
Mayor Delgado?
Yes, thank you, Sean. And Abby and Paul, good. Thank you for that presentation and all the work you've done on this. Shauna, how many river management units are there, and approximately what's the average size?
So there's 7 river management units. I can't say there's an average size because one of them's over 30 miles long and one of them's less than 10 miles long.
So 10 to 30 miles.
There you go. Good. There's a range. Okay. And that's just because of the uniqueness of the river. So they were divided up based on different characteristics.
Okay. You have one of these slides. Maybe you can go back to long-term Salinas River Management Strategy. And that is the same title as Section J in the 401 draft cert. Then there's another section that we talked about earlier, but I only briefly mentioned it because I thought that in the presentations, there might be more discussion about Section I, that is not J, but I, which is the long-term effectiveness assessment plan. So between the long-term assessment plan and management strategy, how do you see those being related, and how do you contrast those?
So I look at the long-term effectiveness assessment plan in Section I as being an evaluation of how this project's working over the long term. And so we are collecting data annually that complies with, you know, all these requests. Basically, we're collecting that data annually. And then after 5 years, we're having someone look at the data we've collected for 5 years, someone in the field of biology or geomorphology, and making some, you know, and analyzing that data as a data set and coming up with conclusions to say, how effective is this program? Is it doing what it was supposed to as designed? Do we need to relook at our approach? And then that would feed into the second 5 years of this certification. When I look at how J is written, the long-term Salinas River Management Strategy, it doesn't appear to, even mention, I mean, this channel maintenance is under item B, but it doesn't talk to me. I don't interpret this as being how effective is this program in the watershed. I know that's what staff, how regional board staff described it, and that makes sense. That's not how I read this, how this is written. And so this looks like this strategy on the larger area, some directing us to be looking outside the channel maintenance program versus how does the channel maintenance program fit in the watershed. That seems like this long-term effectiveness assessment plan is how well is this program doing as designed. It's directly related to what we're proposing. To me, J is not directly related to what we're proposing.
Okay, so on J, where you have the management strategy long-term, there are some deadlines, and one of them is May 31st, 2017 for timeline and interim objectives. Do you see the goals and objectives that you mentioned in one of your slides? It was like the fifth slide. You had a couple of slides for that. Do you see that as sufficing for what is being asked for in this strategy J1, where it asks, or I should say J2, the timeline interim objectives?
I do not. I look at them as two different things. Because we consider the program that we submitted forward as a short-term program, and this is talking about a long-term strategy for the entire river management, including the lagoon, which is not even in our program area.
Okay.
So I consider these objectives to be, they would be new objectives.
Okay. So the interim objectives listed here under the long-term strategy, you see that set of interim objectives as being a different set of objectives than what you have in your presentation?
Correct.
Okay. All right. You didn't talk much about the long-term effectiveness assessment plan. Why didn't you?
Because I think that I'm supportive of us looking at how effective our program is. I had some minor comments in my comment, and the agency's comment letter mentions that it could be, you know, there's some little wording changes we would like, but the intent of it, the Water Resources Agency supports the intent of that. So I didn't really want to, I mean, overall, it goes with the category of we support the 401 certification as written, except for this one condition.
Which is J?
J, this okay. Long-term Salinas River Management Strategy. The slide should have a J on there. And correct.
Okay. So the concerns that you and other stakeholders have who are going to be funding a lot of this work, the stream maintenance, you think that you can work those out if there are differences of opinion and the assessment plan? You think you can work those out between now and September with the board staff?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Paul, the 50 acres, was that right? 50 acres done by the Monterey Reed Management Area on Arundo?
Yes.
That was by Gary Omari?
Yeah.
And you've gone back to some or all of those 50 acres?
We're going back to it. We're still in process this year.
Those that you visited, do you have any sense of how the Arundo is or is gone? Or?
You know, it's very sparse. I haven't seen the mapping data yet because we just started it this last week. But it's in funky little spots under trees and in mm-hmm. some cases growing right up through wood rat middens. Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out how to deal with that.
Got it.
That impacting the wood rats. But so it's, there aren't big stands. It's lots of sort of spread out, scattered patches.
Okay. And Paul, if no Arundo work was done, that's not the plan, but just theoretically, if no work was done as far as this 401 cert, is there enough funding? I was just amazed that you've gotten almost $5 million already. That's fantastic. And that's what it takes, right, for
yeah.
a big job. But by that Conservation Board funding alone, is that enough to work the Arundo in the Salinas River?
That's enough to work the Arundo down to Soledad.
And what percent of the job is that? Is that 60%, 80%?
I would say it's more like 30 or 40%.
Oh, okay.
Because that brings us, I think John did some math when we were on the phone about in terms of what's been treated, and I think that represents the topmost 350, maybe 550 acres
out of the 1,400.
Yeah,
almost three times that.
Yeah.
So if 5 million gets 30%, then you would need another 10 million at that rate.
As far as I'm concerned, yes. Because
right.
It's there are places where it's going to be more challenging and it's going to be more expensive. Blowing through it with mowers, that's the most efficient, because you get so much in one, you know, and it's easy to treat. So we're learning as we go. I mean, I think everybody is with this kind of weed.
All right. Well, I think it's an amazing potential to get rid of the Arundel and the Salinas River. So thanks for all your work.
Thank you.
And I know we had one more speaker card. I'll allow that, but you know, I will now close additional speaker card, but certainly we'll give you the opportunity to speak also. Okay. I have one quick question, and it's actually not quite related to the conversation, but you piqued my interest about the racetrack. Because I'm thinking, is this... but, you know, on the more serious note, I mean, is this trespassing activity?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I'm thinking here, we're talking about millions of dollars. We're talking about, you know, detailed biological analysis and what are we doing to the impact on, for fish habitat. And, I mean, this thing is used like a public dunes project. So, and you know, I apologize on my next question because it's really not germane to why you're here today, but is there any kind of legal enforcement that can be taking place? Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, fish and wildlife and no involvements, and I mean, this is definitely not consistent with all the efforts being talked about here and the concerns that all of you have of being good steward of the land and you know, and our responsibility on water quality.
You know, I've heard of the Department of Fish and Wildlife citing people that are down in the river. I know it's a different issue up here in San Luis Obispo County or upstream in San Luis Obispo County in terms of access, but it's absolutely illegal in Monterey County. And it drives us nuts. We're sort of dancing tenderly around the river when we're doing our work, and then
exactly.
These kids speeding by.
That's what came to my mind. Is, you know, we're putting this project under very close scrutiny. I would say, and yet we have folks who have complete disregard for the environment.
John Pierre, you can go on YouTube and actually see video clips of people in their motorcycles and dune buggies and pickup trucks going up and down the river.
So what's next? A Pokemon app where you go and do your thing? But anyway, I mentioned that because I know it's not part of the agenda, but I think it's worth noticing. And, you know, I would encourage you to maintain contact with the enforcement agencies on this, i.e. Fish and Wildlife. They're the one who have trespassing rights, by the way, so they can go across somebody's property and catch those folks. But I thought I needed to say something. But great job. Certainly appreciate all the efforts that everybody's putting. I do have four additional speaker cards, so I will start with Melissa Duflock, please.
Hi, my name is Melissa Duflock, and I'm a landowner in southern Monterey County. Yeah, the trespass is a problem. We deal with that, too. So my family's had this ranch since 1873, so we're in it for the long haul. You know, we want to do the right thing. And this has been a really, really long process. About the only positive thing I see about the drought is that we didn't have to worry about flooding for a while. And but now we have all this science and technology behind these projects. I mean, it's just amazing. And the first thing I saw was the 2D model. And one of the landowners in the demonstration project said that being able to see really, really specific where their weaknesses were, they saved money because they didn't do as much work. So that's been great. You know, we've been really transparent in this process. We've been working with everybody. We've had, you know, the RCD's been all over the place on our ranch. We've had biologists. Mr. Rohrbach came and visited my ranch, and that was so helpful because the 2D model shows you from the air what could be beneficial, but then he was very site-specific. And one of the things he pointed out to me was this idea of avoidance versus mitigation. And that there is an incentive that's kind of built into the permit because he's showing me these cottonwoods and I'm going, you know, you're right. The cost of avoiding the cottonwoods instead of cutting them down, hauling them out of there, planting new trees. So there are some built-in incentives that I just wanted to point out to you. I'm really going into this with just great confidence with all this science behind us that we have a, you know, we have this multi-effective process and we're gonna protect the habitat, we're gonna help with the recharge because of the Arundo removal, you know, and mitigate some risk of flooding. And so I really hope that this all goes through and so that we can just get our work done and that, you know, the permit goes through as written and we don't get held up and, you know, with extra conditions and all this data, just let us get to work. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment and also your encouragement as a landlady. Thank you. So next is Darlene Din.
Good afternoon, board members. Thank you. First of all, I'm here on behalf of the Salinas River Channel Coalition, but before that, I want to do a couple of thoughts. I want to thank Jennifer Epp for the hours and hours and hours that she spent also while she wasn't up here and listened to me and gave me really good suggestions. I also want to really let you know that there's some really unsung heroes that didn't come here today to speak, and those are some of our electeds that have been with us all along, Congressman Farr and Assemblymember Alejo, who stood with us side by side on really working with the different municipalities, because I don't know if you realize that a lot of the city's treatment plants and different things down the valley, so it's a huge issue. So the what I wanted to talk to you a little bit today and remind you all that this is really a team approach and it's a science-based approach. And the private property owners and all the people that aren't here today need to be really honored to sit down and work in a collaborative. I, like Mr. Johnson, have sat in river issues since 74, so this one was better to not be so contentious. And I just thought that there's a couple points I wanted to make on the long term. The long term includes a lagoon that's a coastal commission and a lot of different people that are not actually involved in the river management, so to tie some of that is really complicated. And to put in effectiveness, I think that it's a really good approach to get there, but it's also the grants that we're gonna get, the $1 million, and we have to sure first make it through the governor's budget and numerous things, but there's just a lot of other people that will be at the table that have to do with it, like the dunes for the lagoon, and they're not really on this project, so it's really complicated. And to just always remind that even though Monterey County Water Resource Agency holds a permit, and they're holding it for the waters of the state, the land is the landowners. So it's really hard to tie a bunch of landowners to a permitting project of long-term planning that they really don't have any authority on. So I would just really strongly think about that and find another way around it. The other thing is that we're all committed because of SGMA and every other planning process known to man. So this is just, this has been really a wonderful solution on how to do private-public partnerships. And the last thing is the 30 feet and the aspect on that permit. We have been really careful on a science base, everything adapted through science base, and we have complete, as landowners, have complete faith in the team's approach and working with your staff. And I think I'm almost at close, and I just really want to thank you, because I think we've really come a long way, and I hope that you recognize that. Thanks.
Impeccable timing. Thank you very much. Donna Myers, please.
And before you speak, please say your name into the record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Hi, my name's Donna Myers, and I'm with a group called Conservation Collaborative. I've been working as a consultant with the team. And I just wanted to just give you, I guess, a little bit of background on, a little further background on approach, and also just make a note about the project design as related to one of the conditions, the 30-foot condition and the certification. I think the strength of what the design is, John mentioned that we actually have identified exactly where we're going to be doing work, and part of that process was spending a lot of time in the field with individual landowners, walking their properties, reviewing places that had flooded in the past, really helping them diagnose the weaknesses in the system. There's not enough money in the world to actually go out and survey everything that's out in the Salinas River in terms of levees and roads and all the pieces that make that place what it is. Physically impossible, monetarily would have been impossible to do. So the access that the project team had to individual landowners who not only had most recent flood information but actually brought out historic photos from their families from the 20s and the 30s, we got a hold of information that really helped our team of scientists really understand and study the flooding patterns of the Salinas River. It is an altered place now, but a lot of what was going on 80 years ago is continuing into today. So we really spent a lot of time with the physicality of the river and the history of the river, and then we're able to actually ground truth that with people in their mid to late 80s all the way down to people who are just starting to take over their families' ranches in their 20s and 30s. So that that local information is critical to designing good flood management that is trying to achieve multiple objectives, such as what we're doing here. I also just wanted to speak as part of the project team with regard to, I think proposed condition in the permit that talks about a 30 foot from developed areas. We do have 123 channels designed. We did go actually physically by GIS measure all of those channels. There are no channels in the design system that are within 30 feet. So in other words, they're all outside that 30 foot. Most of them are hundreds of feet away from any kind of developed area. So I just want to make a clarification on that in terms of that condition. I think, in a sense, we've met that condition through the design process. So I just wanted to give you some clarification on that. And I'll give my extra whatever seconds to the next person. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the last speaker card, and also last speaker card of the day, is Mr. Steve Shemek. And you were just donated an extra 25 seconds.
Well, thank you, Donna. So Steve Shimmick with the Otter Project in Monterey Coast Keeper. So first of all, I want to recognize the terrific work, frankly, that the Nature Conservancy and its partners have done on this project. This program is far superior than the previous programs. I mean, if you think actually back a ways, I mean, it's before my time, but they used to actually overfly the Salinas River with planes and spray it with defoliant. Then after that, they used to go at it with bulldozers and bulldoze hundreds of feet wide in places, just down to bare sand and just leave it. The picture with the big red X was a picture that I had taken from a plane. And so we've learned a lot, and we've come a long way. The current project is generally good. We've been a vocal critic of this project, and frankly, we suggested changes. We suggested that 30 feet. The 30 feet is not about the planned projects. It's what happens once you do adaptive management. We don't want it to adapt within that 30 feet of developed area, so that's our safeguard. And that was put in there, and we were fully in support of this project. And then on Monday, we received this 5 pages of proposed changes. I have not seen the current letter, so I don't know what's in there, so I can only go by the draft. But our concerns were, one, they suggested a change in the definition of main channel. What our concern is with that is that if you narrowly define main channel, they can put the sediment that they essentially dredge outside of the main channel. That would mean putting that sediment where there's going to be flow within 5 or 10 years or maybe even 2 or 3 or whatever. But we don't want that material that's pesticide laden to get put back into the system in higher flows. It's unconsolidated at that point. It's going to move, and it's going to move easily. So we would be supportive of a condition that basically says that material must be removed outside the 20-year floodplain. There is also a condition in there that seems nonsensical to us. It basically says the Water Resources Agency seeks to avoid, they want to avoid monitoring except where adaptive management is needed. Well, that's kind of circular, right? Because if they don't monitor, how are they going to know where adaptive management is needed? So we're supportive of the staff proposal there. We're also supportive of the staff's effectiveness monitoring conditions. One of the things that, at least the draft that I saw, was that they did not want to incorporate current data. Well, that's essential when you do modeling. You have to incorporate. And I'm going to go over, use my 20 seconds here, but I want to talk about this long-term monitoring. We have been promised a long-term monitoring program for over a decade. For the agency to say, well, there's all these other agencies involved. Yes, all those other agencies, and I can't speak for them, but I will for a moment, they're frustrated that there is no long-term monitoring plan. They want this. Just like this program is not part of the lagoon is not part of this program. So someone has to say there needs to be long-term monitoring program for this river. And my suggestion would be, I agree with the agency that having it due, you know, this year when they've already moved, they've already planned their budget, that's tough. So my suggestion would be that the staff create some goals and objectives that must be complied with within the first 5 years, because that's when you are going to essentially not really be a reopener, but that's the time when you get to say, okay, here's where we're going to adapt. And frankly, my suggestion would be that if those goals and objectives for working towards that long-term plan are not achieved in that first 5 years, it not be renewed. Not after 10, but at that 5 years. They need to move on the long-term plan. Thank you, and I'm sorry I went over time.
That's okay. You know, there was a few extra seconds from yesterday up to today, so we bundled it all for you.
Thank you. I will also say that if I had known about these changes, I would have asked for extra time. Yeah.
And I have a question for Mr. Robertson, and I know, and then you have a question too. What I'd like to do this after, though, is to hear response from our staff, and then, you know, we can conclude our questions. But the first quick question I have, personally, this ties to this letter. When did this letter come to us?
So are you referencing the draft letter from the agency, or Mr. Schimmick?
No, apparently there was this last-minute letter, which I'm...
We,
We received the final letter last night. We received a draft letter that the agency had written for its board on Monday. And so when we got the draft letter, we started talking to, either Monday or Tuesday, we started talking to the agency about it. And the final letter has changed somewhat, but not substantially.
Okay, the reason I asked is that this is more administrative procedure. It has happened before where we have things coming last minute. You know, we do have, for example, procedure where noon, Monday, that's the deadline to make submittals. And I don't think it makes good transparency, you know, and whatever, I'm sure you had good reasons for the delays, to provide this letter to us. But I'm just not comfortable having now discussions about a letter which I haven't seen, I haven't read the content. This has bit us in the past where then we make on the fly, you know, evaluations, speculations. And frankly, your letter may be minimal, you know, the consequence may be very small, but I very much encourage, you know, and this is not just about this item, but for anyone, you know, when you meet with us, please, please give us those things in a timely fashion.
Dr. Wolf, it's my understanding that the letter was on time because there's a comment period for the 401 cert, and that wasn't over until today. So there's no problem on the timing.
Correct. The letter is admissible to the as a comment letter to the draft certification, but then bringing it into this dialogue without other parties having seen it and been able to respond to it makes it really difficult.
Right. Yeah, that's my point. Thank you.
But that's not the fault of the letter writer, right? I mean, they did everything correctly. It's just that our process was awkward in being able to.
Okay, I don't want to go there, okay? I want to end up with a happy Friday afternoon, but.
How long is the letter? How long is the letter?
It's about 5 pages.
We
can characterize it for you very, very quickly, but I maybe you don't want that.
I don't want that.
Okay.
Okay, and this is going to be chair prerogative here because this has happened before. Then we review last minute letters. And then we make misinterpretations. I'm not comfortable with that. Now, my colleagues, you can overrule me on this, but I speak my mind here. I'm not comfortable with this process.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
First, I would point out that I don't believe it was a letter to the board. I believe it was a letter to staff. This is an information item for the board. The public comment is still open, and staff is still working on the final text of the cert. So I understand when we have a matter before the board that we're going to take action on, that it is very frustrating for us to get comments that we have to act on at the last minute. This was not a letter to us. The question I have is this. You know, there's been much back and forth on this board as to how much this should be a cert that is where the final details are worked out and executed by staff and the executive officer, and to what extent that the board should exercise its prerogative to do that. I would note that staff expressed confidence that they could work out the remaining issues, that the various agencies involved in the partnership expressed confidence that they could work out those issues. Mr. Schimmick expressed objections to some things that the partners had said in the letter and expressed some things he thought should be in the certification. I would like to ask him if he has the same confidence that those issues can be worked out with staff.
I have the same confidence. This can be worked out.
Thank you.
Well, those supplement my view that not only in writing, but also I do not like sometimes being asked the day before the meetings to discuss matters that are being discussed at the board. May it be informational, may it be regulatory, and the same applies for these letters. I think it's good communication. That's all I'm saying, okay? And I'm just, you know, we love hearing what you have to say, but I think it's great when, if you have a well-informed board, you're going to have a good board. That's all I'm saying.
Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. There was some confusion about, and Steve Semek referred to this, about using the main channel for deposit of fill material. And I wondered if staff, because I did talk to staff a little bit about this yesterday, I wondered if staff could explain to us the difference between using the main channel versus the high water mark as the constraining boundaries of where you can put some of this dredged out material.
Well, the main difference is that it has to do with the frequency of flow events at different boundaries. If you put sediment right outside the ordinary high water mark, for instance, which is usually defined as about somewhere between the 2 and 5 year flow event. So if you put your sediment right outside that, then that means at a flow event higher than 2 to 5 years, you could have flow mobilizing your sediment stockpile. So it's a standard condition in 401 certifications that you can't stockpile sediment within waters of the state. So, and the waters of the state in this case go out to what we've been calling, Water Board staff has been calling the main channel in our presentation, that width of the riparian corridor. So the short answer to your question is the difference has to do with how frequently under what circumstances the sediment stockpile could find itself to be in flowing water and be redistributed to the river. We don't want that to happen. There are the extent to which NIMS has concerns about the project, it has to do with sediment mobilization in the river as a result of the project. So we certainly don't want to add to that by allowing sediment stockpiles where they could be reintroduced into stream flows under storm events. So what we're working at with the agency and it's not enough for just to be right outside of the ordinary high water mark, but how far away does it need to be protective of beneficial uses? And that's the discussion we're having.
Okay, thank you. And then Chair, I think I heard recently, and I know I heard today, some concern about requiring system-wide or watershed-wide monitoring and assessment for a project scope that includes particular reaches. And when I think of 123 reaches 10 to 30 miles long throughout the watershed, it seems to me that treating all those areas cumulatively approach a watershed-wide impact potential. So that asking for some watershed-wide assessment doesn't seem too far out of bounds, but I'm hearing that it's being thought of as sort of mission creep or overreach.
Well, let me correct a couple of things. There are 7 river management units.
I'm so sorry, right, 7.
But, and there are 123 secondary channels. Right. The secondary channels aren't 10 to 30 feet long.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Okay, so look, could you repeat your question for me? Sorry, what?
I think I understand.
Okay.
So given that there's 7 river management units, 10 to 30 miles long, it sounds like it's a pretty extensive breadth.
Yes.
That might have an impact on the breadth of the watershed.
Yeah, I agree, and that's the reason behind the requirement for some long-term planning. This is a project along 90 miles of the river for a decade of work. That is a watershed level impact, if I've ever heard of one. And so the idea that project needs to be looked at and assessed in a watershed context is what we're trying to achieve. Now, the agency has pointed to the language in Section J and said, okay, but that's not really what this section says. And so what staff here is committed, like what John and I are committed to doing, is working with the agency, and I understand from them, from informal conversations, that they're okay with talking about this as well, is figuring out a way to get some of this watershed scale assessment and planning done in the context of this project, but that the particular language there and the timelines that are in Section J are not acceptable to them. So what staff is proposing today is to work on that with them and come up with an approach that gives them the flexibility they need to deal with the stakeholders that are involved, gives them the time they need, but also requires progress on a long-term plan for the river, because this project is an integral part of the river.
All right. And I'm wondering if we can hear any closing thoughts by the deputy director of the agency, because he's been here all day, and I assume he has some things that he'd like to say.
Maybe.
For your time, let's go home.
No. Again, I just really do want to thank the board and staff, and definitely the last few days with both Mr. Hammer and Mr. Rohrbaugh on really trying to hammer out what we need to do for this certification. And we understand it's a draft. And so just working towards where we can all see beneficial activities come from this. Thinking about it, I really think about this as kind of a 3C kind of operation, and it's more like collaboration, where we've seen collaboration with the project partners, and then we've seen some cooperation with the project team and the landowners. And establishing RMUs or river management units may sound like, oh, something easy to do, but some of these guys, people, growers, folks, maybe don't talk to each other often. And this has got them doing that. So again, this is a really interesting collaborative, cooperative process that I really want to see continue, and that's my third C. So the continuation part of it is we need time to evaluate this program, the stream maintenance program. We need time to evaluate that through various water year types. Dry, we've got that one, I think. But normal water year and wet water years, what does that mean? And that takes time. Once, you know, hopefully through the time frame of this certification, this 10 years, we'll have hopefully a range of those water year types there to where we can evaluate what strategies work, what strategies didn't work, and how to move forward with a long-term Salinas River management plan, which is really what our paradigm is. The paradigm is the current program moving to a new program, as in channel maintenance moving towards river management. And when we think about that, that includes San Luis Obispo County. Okay, they're not here. They're not on this program. So just that, you know, we're working together well with them around Nacimiento and with the SGMA, or Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. I mean, it may not sound like that's important, but there's a interconnected stream issue there, that where too much groundwater being pulled from the ground affects the stream flow. Now we're there. We have that nexus. So there's a lot of opportunity with this program to really find out what are great strategies for SGMA as we move forward, and for the long-term program when we get there. And I thank Board Member Delgado for the opportunity to call me up here again, and I thank the board for their time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And I will add a 4C, where this is an informational item, and I'd like ultimately to bring it to conclusion. So I would like the opportunity for staff and Mr. Robertson to comment on, you know, the last presentation, the speakers, et cetera. And then after that, kind of get a little bit input from the rest of our board here for this item. Any comment or
I believe we've covered all the issues and points we want to say. We acknowledge the issues that they raise in their presentation, and I think we've made ourselves clear that we think we can work through them. I don't necessarily think this is the appropriate forum to try and do that, which you've made clear. It's very difficult. So what we've been proposing throughout is to say we're very close. As far as we know, all parties are in supportive, and we have some details to work out. And our proposal is to go forth and do that, issue the certification by way of the executive officer, and report back to the board at the next board meeting on the results of that.
Mr. Robertson?
So I was, thank you, Phil, and I'd also like to add, I have full confidence that along with the Water Resources Agency and with Mr. Shimmick and with staff, that we will be able to negotiate through to the satisfaction of most the remaining hurdles or challenges that are in front of us. I want to take a step back to view our irrigated lands program. Isn't this where we would like our irrigated lands program to go ultimately, to this sort of cooperative collectivist approach that involves landowners, staff, and environmental groups? So this is a success, and I want to keep this in perspective, you know, and hold it in that light. Let's see if I had any other comments. Phil, do you want to talk about anything with regards to fish passage, or is it any outstanding questions associated with that? I'm looking at you, Mr. Young.
As long as Bill Stevens' recommendations are, you know, duly considered and not overlooked.
Right.
Or
so,
downplayed. I mean, he's the expert, and, you know, I would just hope that, you know, those would be followed
as
protective of those, of that beneficial use.
At the lunch break, I asked staff about their level of consultation with Bill Stevens, and they said that he was in agreement of the demonstration project. He had some concerns about the sediment movement issues. When staff explained those to him in depth, he said, correct me if I mischaracterize this, but he thought it was a greater issue. And then when staff relayed the details, he realized, I'm comfortable with that. So
clarify a little bit what Bill asked for at the last permitting committee meeting was just more information from the agency, how they proposed to do that work. And the agency provided that, I think, about 2 weeks ago. He looked at that more detailed protocol, and his response to me was, it's a lot smaller than I thought it was.
Right. So, and we're fully committed to working with NIMS going forward, too.
John, should this come back to the board at the five-year mark when the long-term maintenance strategy is developed?
So I think we'll have continuous dialogue with the board probably even before that point in time on this issue, not so much as a like permit year by year with the board, but just as a feedback to the board to reassure the board that staff has their eyes on the project and the project is adapting as we anticipate it would. You know, that lessons learned loop is correcting the project and improving the project through time.
And I would like to suggest this, you know, supporting a little bit, you know, Mr. Young, is next year, 12 months from now, and you embed this in your EO report, give us just a little sliver, informational update. I mean, we spent better part of a day on this item, and I think waiting 5 years is long disproportioned.
Yeah.
So, you know, so this would give us a chance to go through a winter month, you know, see, you know, and hopefully this will be a year with abundant rains, and we would be able to get a little bit of additional feedback and our level of comfort on how things are going. What do you think, Mr. Young?
Well, that's fine with me. I mentioned 5 years to make sure that's included because they're going to have the long-term strategy in place.
Yeah.
That I just want to make sure the board has a chance to look at that, but bring it back every year, Jean-Pierre, at this time is fine with me.
All right, very good. So, I see a nod from all my fellow board members. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Shimmick, a nod?
Sure.
Okay, no, there
wanna,
we go.
I want to see a thumbs up.
Yeah.
This is actually huge. This is momentous.
Yeah.
This is great.
I want to see a thumbs up and a selfie
okay.
with
Take
me.
A picture huh? of him. Take a picture of him. Go ahead. All right.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Appreciate your contributions. So for the record, I want to let the record know that Mr. Young came to the meeting right after the roll call this morning, so yes. He definitely was here on time. And this will conclude our Friday, July 29, 2016 meeting, and it is 2:20. Thank you, everyone,
okay.
and have a great upcoming weekend.
Okay.